Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting college football bowl games, good luck. No, seriously, it's never been harder. And you don't want to be hurting your bankroll. You want to make sure you're doing your homework. Listen to Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I will be breaking down every single bowl game, dropping new episodes nearly every day throughout college football's postseason. Spicing things up with a 12-team playoff. Can't wait to see some of those teams from the South come up north for the snow. Be sure to subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is WTIC's Law Talk, a project of the Hartford County Bar Association. If you have a legal question, call now, 860-522-WTIC or 800-966-WTIC. And now, it's time for Law Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080 and WTIC.com.
So, welcome to Law Talk. If you're new and you're wondering, well, what's Law Talk? Allow me to tell you. First of all, let me introduce myself. I'm Attorney John Matulis from the Hartford County Bar Association. What is Law Talk? Law Talk is your interactive legal toolbox. Everybody has to deal with this thicket of laws and rules and regulations that are out there that seem at one time or another to bedevil every one of us. Well, if you've got a question concerning matters legal in nature, you've got a comment legal in nature, not political but legal, we're here for you. The phone number, 860-522-WTIC. That's 860-522-9842. We're here for an hour. This program is for you, and it is your program. If you've got questions, you've got topics legal in nature that you'd like to discuss, we'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, this is what we normally do, and this is what we're doing today. We've got some carefully curated topics, recent legal news, virtually all of which is from real cases that we've selected because they're interesting, because they may have some applicability to something going on in your lives, or because you may just raise an eyebrow and say, is that how that works? So that's the rundown, folks, and we're delighted to hear from you. It's better to call earlier in the program than later, because at 1 o'clock we turn into a pumpkin and then it's time for news and weather and pet talk. And we'd like to give you as much time as we can so that we can help you with your legal issue. The lineup for today, we're going to follow up with a listener call from last week regarding certain national class actions involving a particular drug. And we'll talk a little bit about what's called multi-district litigation so that you understand how that stuff works out. We're going to follow that up with a quick look at firearms regulation here in Connecticut. There is a significant United States Supreme Court decision, and how that is going to affect the laws here in Connecticut remains to be seen, but we'll take a peek at that and let you know what it looks like so far as we can tell. After that, we're going to visit our legal word of the day and go through that, and this one is going to be the word annulment, A-N-N-U-L-M-E-N-T. What is that? Well, we'll tell you. And we've got a case fresh from the appellate court that is going to touch on a couple of other aspects of it, but we're going to visit that. And finally, if we have time, we're going to get to an issue called prisoner bereavement leave and a lawsuit that a prisoner filed when he was denied leave from prison to go to his mom's funeral. So that's the story. Once again, our phone number is 860-522-WTIC. That's 860-522-9842. And remember, it's streaming audio on the net. That's WTIC.com. And just hit the listen live button. And there we are. So if you're outside the wide range listening area from the over-the-air signal, all 50,000 watts of it, You can get on us just as easily by going to WTIC.com and punching that Listen Live button. Okay, so we're going to start off with a follow-up from one of our listeners last week. A gentleman called up and asked about a drug. The correct pronunciation is Suboxone, and in case this affects you, I'm going to spell it. It's S-U-B-O-X-O-N-E. Suboxone was a widely used medication used in the treatment of addictions, and at one point it was the treatment of choice for opioid addictions. Well, there are a lot of claims that among the long-term side effects, which nobody seemed to recognize earlier, was severe dental issues and otherwise unexplained loss of teeth. So we had a listener who called up and asked about any lawyers in Connecticut that were handling the case, and I promised we'd get back to you further. So point number one, we don't recommend specific attorneys or law firms on this show. There are many very good firms that pay good money to advertise here, and we're not going to be recommending somebody because you happen to hear about them on Law Talk. Now, that said, the Suboxone litigation is what's referred to as multi-district litigation, and more specifically, this involves a product liability or drug product liability. If one of the drugs administered to somebody causes this problem, because they're all made the same in theory, there should be a lot of other people that have the same problem. Well, guess what? With respect to Suboxone and severe dental issues, that is exactly the case. So for our listener from last week, this is what I'd recommend you do. Go on the internet and Google a phrase, something like Suboxone tooth decay lawsuit or Suboxone lawsuits. And what you're going to find is a series of articles from law firms that have been representing people nationally in the federal court in claims concerning Suboxone with injuries similar to the ones that you described. In other words, unexplained loss of teeth for no reason. Now, that leads us to a discussion of how these class actions are handled. One of these law firms, I'm not going to mention the name, but you'll find it very easily, they write almost a journal that explains about what's going on with the litigation. They are representing 657 different individuals that all have sued the makers of Suboxone for similar problems. So the multi-district litigation means that these cases, wherever they are filed, all end up getting consolidated in one seat of court. There's a lot of efficiencies that flow from that. You have one judge who is going to be making the decisions, and you're not going to have different and potentially inconsistent decisions on the same issue from a number of different judges. The discovery issues can be controlled and made uniform so that the experts on each side can be deposed once and the other discovery issues can be all made uniform. So there are a lot of efficiencies. Then there's always the possibility of a trial of a representative case. And a lot of times both sides want to do this because the similarities are so great from one case to another that you can try one, and depending on how that comes out, that may go a long way towards developing a settlement for the others. So that's what happens with multi-district litigation. To our listener who inquired last week, it's not necessary to have a Connecticut attorney to do this for you. You can contact one of these firms with a national practice. However, if you feel more comfortable having a Connecticut attorney, there are many that will represent you in this litigation, but it's going to be swept into the multi-district litigation, and it's going to be litigated primarily by these same attorneys anyway. There's a creditors committee or a claims committee, the defendants similarly organized. So that's the answer to our listener from last week. And if you have a question similar to that, don't hesitate to give us a call. If we can help you out on the air right away, that's exactly what we're going to do. If we don't have the answer right at our fingertips, we'll look into it and we'll get back to you on the next program. In the meantime, just want to remind you, it's Law Talk and it is WTIC News Talk 1080 and WTIC.com, streaming audio on the net, and Odyssey radio station. Okay, welcome back to Law Talk. Getting bumped back into the next segment by Carlos Santana there. A good choice from our producer, Kevin. That's sound of the season. It's almost Halloween as we're doing this program, and got a couple of different topics to cover as we're going forward today on a beautiful Saturday. Phone number is 860-522-WTIC, 860-522-9842. It's time in the program where we're going to do our segment called Legal Word of the Day. And the legal word of the day today is annulment, okay? Annulment contrasted with divorce, also known as dissolution of marriage. A divorce or a dissolution of marriage is a judicial termination of a marriage. It dissolves it, and there are entered orders as appropriate regarding alimony, child support, property distribution, etc., etc. Annulment, on the other hand, is also a judicial declaration, but it's a declaration that a marriage is void or is voidable. And that's different. The end result is that the court can still order similar awards regarding property and finances and custody and visitation, if appropriate for that case. So why are we talking about the difference? Because we've got a case here, which is absolutely fascinating. And would you like to hear about it? Good. I thought you might. So this comes from the appellate court, because that's where this case ended up. And this involves the marriage, so-called, of Vincent and Miriam. And let me just tell you some of the facts as the appellate court describes them, okay? Vincent and Miriam obtained a marriage license in February of 2019 and were married later that day. Time of the marriage, Vincent was 82 years old. Miriam was 52 years old. And while it doesn't say so right here, it makes it quite clear in the opinion later that one of the two of them had substantial assets. Want to make a guess which one? Okay. The court goes on to say that the marriage ceremony was performed by a justice of the peace, and that JP was a friend of Miriam and a mere acquaintance of Vincent. No family members were invited to attend the ceremony. None of them did so. 2 days before Miriam obtained the marriage license for them, Vincent underwent a surgical procedure and was suffering from numerous medical conditions. He was also hospitalized 2 days after the ceremony. Now, fast forward 3 months later, okay, and the probate court appoints Vincent's niece as his conservator under a voluntary conservatorship. Regular listeners are going to recall the difference between voluntary and involuntary conservatorships. This case, Vincent was the applicant. There was no determination of incompetence by the probate court, but his niece was appointed to help him. 1 month later, in June, he consults an attorney and he starts an action to dissolve or to annul the marriage. The reasons that he recites is that he was, quote, incompetent at the time of the marriage. And he's filed a number of different motions, especially one asking the court to order that Miriam not continue to collect all the rent from Vincent's properties. 2 months after the case started, Vincent dies with no will. So what happened here is they filed a motion, Miriam's attorneys filed a motion to dismiss the divorce for lack of subject matter jurisdiction. And what all that means is that she's saying, well, the guy's dead. You don't have jurisdiction to go any further with this. Oh, and guess what? I'm the widow of this guy who died without a will and who had property. And so under the laws of intestate succession, that property goes to you know who. Well, what happened here was the niece now moved to have the executor of the administrator of the estate substituted for the late Vincent as a party. And so there was a big fight here about whether they could do so and so on. Now, to get a little bit more of an idea of this claim that Vincent himself made that he was incompetent, The court took a look and found very, very credible the testimony of an expert witness that was offered on behalf of Vincent's administrator. This is a psychiatrist. He reviewed the extensive medical records, and they found that he was medically compromised to such a degree on the day of the wedding, he was not competent to make important decisions. The laundry list of conditions is 28 separate medical conditions that are listed in the report. They get everything from prostate cancer, blood infections, congestive heart failure, and on and on and on. And 2 days before the wedding ceremony, he'd undergone a surgical procedure to investigate his blood loss and his dizziness. So the court concluded that he was not competent to enter into that marriage. They annulled the marriage. Oh, a little bit more interesting testimony here, too. And this one the appellate court threw in because I'm sure they found it instructive. Okay. They said that Vincent was in the hospital and his niece came to visit him. And she testified that she showed him the marriage license, and this was early May, which was about the time he was getting conserved, and as the court puts it, the following exchange took place. At first, he didn't know what I was showing him, and then I explained to him that it was a marriage license and that his signature was on the paper, the copy that I had. So the niece goes on to say, and he just looked at me confused, and he said, no, he goes, I didn't get married. And the niece says, well, apparently you did because I have the license in front of me, and she showed it to him. And all he said to me was, I was tricked. So you can probably see how this case turns out, and we'll talk in just a second about how that translates into an annulment. Yes, the trial court did annul the marriage. In other words, it determined there never was a marriage. It found he was incompetent to enter into the marriage. Well, Miriam took the appeal, and the appellate court looked at all of the technical reasons she raised, including lack of subject matter jurisdiction, and went through a big, thorough analysis and said, nope, this marriage is null and void. You were never married to this man. You do not have the rights, in this case, the substantial rights that a widow would have to his estate. So that is the story. That is the word of the day, annulment, here on Law Talk. And we're going to have to break in a moment for news and weather, and then we'll be back with more Law Talk. I'm Attorney John Matulis from the Hartford County Bar Association, and this is WTIC News Talk 1080 and WTIC.com streaming audio on the net. Okay, welcome back to Law Talk. It's WTIC News Talk 1080 and Odyssey radio station. I'm Attorney John Matulis from the Hartford County Bar Association. Got a phone call, a question for us? Got a phone call, legal comment? Delighted to hear from you at 860-522-WTIC. That's 860-522-9842. Remember also WTIC.com, streaming audio on the net. You can catch up with us if you can get on the net anywhere on the planet. Then we're there for you these Saturday afternoons. The programs are recorded. They're podcasted. You can find them easily enough on WTIC.com/podcast. Check it out. They're usually up a couple of days after the program. So this is the time in the program when it is my obligation to let you know that if you don't already have an attorney and you're looking for some quality legal advice, especially inexpensive quality legal advice, please consider the Hartford County Bar Association's not-for-profit lawyer referral service. That's right, not-for-profit lawyer referral service. And this is the way it works. You phone them at the number that I'm going to give you in just a moment. They will ask you a couple of questions in order to determine the nature of your legal inquiry so they can refer you to an attorney who practices in the right discipline. If you've got questions about, say, trusts and estates, you're not necessarily going to get the help that you want from somebody who specializes in criminal defense, okay? And what you get, the two questions are always, what do I get and what does it cost me? Good questions, so let's answer them. Question number one, what do I get? You get a half hour consult with an attorney who practices in the right area to help you with your specific inquiry. That's not true for everybody, but it's going to be true if you use this service. At the end of that half hour, there's no hard sell. There's no pressing for further services. But if you and the attorney decide that further services are warranted, the two of you are free to discuss that. And if you choose to go forward together, that's fine. If you don't, that's fine also. The half hour, it can be over the telephone. It can be in person in the attorney's office. It can also be on one of the platforms like Zoom or something of that nature, Microsoft Teams maybe, whatever it is that you and the attorney decide. So, sound pretty good so far? Yeah, it doesn't sound very cheap. Well, here's the good news, okay? There is a one-time only fee of $35, and that helps to underwrite some of the cost of running this not-for-profit program. There's rent, there's salaries, there's phone lines, there's admin expenses. So this covers some of that. So, $35? Well, there's a couple of exceptions also. So let me tell you about those. You got a personal injury claim that you're inquiring about, they're going to waive the $35 fee for you. You're banged up. You don't have one of those, but you got a workers' compensation claim. Same thing. No fee for you either. The last category, if you're inquiring about a Social Security disability claim, obviously not the best, not feeling your best, no fee for you either. So this is how you access the service. Pencils ready, folks. Phone number 860-525-6052. That's 860-525-6052. That is the Hartford County Bar Association's not-for-profit lawyer referral service. You can give them a call just about any time. When they're not open, you can leave a message and they will respond when you'll hear back from them when they reopen. So they're not open on Saturday nights or Sundays, but you can still leave a message at 860-525-6052. And if you tell them Law Talk sent you, that would be okay also. So let me tell you about firearms regulation. Okay, most people know and understand that Connecticut has a pretty comprehensive set of regulations in the form of statutes and rules and regulations regarding firearms, okay? Well, this is an area that's been in considerable flux, and we're going to talk about a case that involved a constitutional challenge to Connecticut's statutes, okay? The defendant was charged and convicted for selling AR-15 style rifles without serial numbers, without proper documentation, charged with two counts for the sale of assault weapons, 65 counts of possession of large capacity magazines, three counts of possession of silencers, okay? The last two are either severely regulated or outright illegal to possess for most of us. So between the time that he was convicted and the time he was sentenced, the United States Supreme Court released its decision in a case called New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin. And the defendant in this case said, wait a minute, I want this case reopened so I can file a motion to dismiss because I believe that Connecticut's laws are now unconstitutional. So the trial court heard his argument, denied it, and he appealed to the appellate court. Okay? So here's what the appellate court did. It reversed the finding in the trial court. Said the trial court had made a mistake, and it sent it back to the trial court to reconsider and to apply the test which came out of the Supreme Court's decision in New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin. Now, you're going to hear this phrase. It's going to be called a text and history test. So how does that work? Well, this is probably going to lead to a lot of activity in the Connecticut courts and perhaps in the appellate courts also. But here's the way it works. if the defendant who's arrested for violating these firearms laws in Connecticut challenges their constitutionality, the first thing the defendant has to do is to show that the items at issue are firearms. Okay, remember in this case, we also had not only the assault weapons, but 65 counts of possessing large capacity magazines, 3 counts of possession of silencers. So the first question is, are those firearms? Okay. The second question then is, if they are firearms, are they in common use or are they typically possessed for lawful purposes like self-defense? Okay. The AR-15 is for self-defense. The silencers are for self-defense. You make up your mind. Now, if the defendant is able to do that, the burden shifts back to the state of Connecticut. The prosecutors have to prove by presenting what the court refers to as relevantly similar historical analogs that its regulation of these protected firearms was consistent with, get this, the nation's historical tradition of firearm regulation. Okay? Now, that's another phrase, that analysis for originalism, because it basically says, well, how did the country always do it? So that's the issue that now confronts somebody who may be arrested for, may be prosecuted for, maybe even was convicted for violation of Connecticut's firearms. We're going to have to take a break for a minute. We've got a couple of calls that we're going to attend to shortly after we come back. You're listening to Law Talk on WTIC, News Talk 1080, and WTIC.com, streaming audio on the net. Okay, Kevin, this better be Halloween music. Okay, fair enough. Well, that's quite enough of that. Hey, welcome back to Law Talk. Our phone number is 860-522-WTIC, 860-522-9842. If that's easier, we're only going to be here for another 20 minutes, 15 minutes, so let's go right to the phones. First up, Alan in Hartford. Thanks for calling, and tell us how we can help you, Alan.
I called several months ago, and my son was diagnosed with cryocryptosis, and 8 years later, they decided that they made the wrong disease, and they said he had MS.
Multiple sclerosis?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he has them for 8 years, they treated him for the wrong disease. So I called, and you gave me a number last time, but the lawyer that would take a case, but nobody seems to want to take the case. So I don't know what, you know, I'm calling back again to see if you have somebody else. Maybe you could help me this time. Last time they took his number and he called them, and they said, no, they couldn't take the case. So.
First of all, Alan, I'm very sorry to hear about your son's health, and I'm wishing everybody the best. I think that the problem, based on what we're able to learn in this phone call, is the passage of time and the phrase statute of limitations. I suspect that that might be the problem here. Now, was your son treated, it's crypto. What was the original misdiagnosis once again?
Cryptocrystinosis.
Okay. And did that involve active treatment under the care of a physician who continued to treat him for that during the entire period?
Yes.
Okay. Now,
they gave him 1 year to live. And after years and years and years, he was still living. They wanted to do some experimental with him. Good thing he didn't have it done.
I guess so. So this yeah, is this
and,
is go
as
ahead.
As far as the statute of limitation goes, I was told that it wouldn't count on this because I couldn't get an attorney.
Now, here's what might have been said to you. The statute of limitations for medical malpractice generally is 2 years from the date of the occurrence or from when a person should reasonably have become aware of it, with a maximum of 3 years. That's called the statute of repose, the three-year piece of it, but there are some exceptions. One of the exceptions is called the continuing treatment doctrine, okay? Now, there are some lawyers that are very expert in medical malpractice. I'm not going to give you any names over the air, but if you're willing to hold on, I'll talk to you off air about that. A lot of lawyers who do this kind of work will tell you that the continuing care exception is a difficult one to use, but in this case here, it may very well apply. Now, how old is your son currently, Alan?
Oh, 56.
Okay, so he's got a statistical life expectancy for quite a few years yet. And had he not been ill, his actuarial life expectancy would have taken him to something like 77, 78 years. It's a little bit less now because of COVID. That shaved some time off everybody's life expectancy. But what I'm going to ask you to do is call back at 1 o'clock. I'll talk to you off air. I think that the people that you spoke to immediately recognized the statute of limitations issue. And the continuing care doctrine is a tricky doctrine, but I think that you need to have this matter looked at by somebody who has substantial experience with that particular doctrine, okay? So would you call back at 1 and we'll talk off air?
Yes, Thank you very much.
I hope I'll be able to help you. We're going to give it our best shot, Alan, okay?
Thank you again.
Take care. I'll talk to you later. Bye now. Okay, our phone number is 860-522-WTIC. That's 860-522-9842. Next up, Rob in Meriden. Hi, Rob. Welcome back to Law Talk, and I understand you got a question for us.
Yeah. You were talking about the appellate. I had a question. You know, you bring up a lot of, it makes me think here. The appellate court, you used a term, reapply.
Reconsider. So,
I think you said reapply, actually. But either way, is that a benefit for the defendant?
Oh, yeah, because what happened in that particular case, and if I didn't make it clear, that's on me.
No, I heard about the guns, and I'm not a gun enthusiast whatsoever. I don't like guns.
Understood. That's fine.
I don't like them around me with them.
Yeah. The guy got convicted of all of these charges. And, somebody that's got AR-15s with no serial numbers on them, frankly, it's hard for me to believe that that's a legitimate ownership for self-defense.
Usually you think you're done.
The high-capacity magazines, 65 of those, same type of doubtfulness in my mind. And then silencers, I understand, are illegal unless you have special permission from the police or something anyway. But here's what happened, though. He gets convicted, but between the time he gets convicted and the time he gets sentenced, this new decision from the U.S. Supreme Court comes down. So his lawyers say, whoa, we want this case to be reopened so we can move for it to be dismissed because based on these new criteria, Connecticut statutes that he was convicted under are unconstitutional. So the trial court listened to him and said, nope, we're upholding the decision. He gets sentenced and he appeals to the appellate court. So now the appellate court says, no, the new decision sets forth a different framework that the court has to use. And that's where we got into the business about he's got to prove, first of all, that these things are actually firearms. And secondly, that there's consistent with a socially acceptable use, such as self-defense. Now, there's a lot of big question marks about this, and we
double
just
jeopardy,
alluded.
Though.
Well, no, it's not double jeopardy because
when you have two different courts. Yeah, that's
the appellate court is saying the trial court made a mistake. So they remanded it to the trial court to reconsider the motion to dismiss.
Yeah, reconsider was almost like redo like the Karen Reed trial in Massachusetts, which is totally unrelated.
Yeah.
But not to bring that up, but it's just almost using, I'm just using the word double jeopardy. The appellate court, I guess, is a good thing. You said it's best for the defendant.
That's
correct.
What happened in this case. Double jeopardy is what keeps. Let me finish the thought,
jeopardy.
Rob, let me finish the thought. The double jeopardy is the concept that keeps the state from going back and trying somebody a second time. In this case, if they had tried the guy and he was acquitted, well, then they can't go back and try him again. So that's where the double jeopardy prohibition comes in. But in this case, remember, the guy got convicted and the appellate court said, no, Mr. Trial Judge, you made a mistake. So we're ordering you, we're remanding the matter back to you for the specific purpose of you reconsidering, reanalyzing this in the framework of this New York versus Bruin, the Bruin case it's referred to.
Now, the prosecution could say, wait a minute, this is double jeopardy. Now we had this guy. Now you want us to retry it? I'm talking about the other people who are like, hey, we got to go through this again. We thought we had to do it.
So the business about other people is really key here, because the Supreme Court decision in the minds of a lot of people is at variance with what Connecticut's laws say. So if there are other people out there who have been arrested for violating the same or similar statutes here in Connecticut,
they could use that as a precedent.
Their lawyers are going to be saying, motion to dismiss, the statutes may be unconstitutional. That's the point of it, and that's why we wanted to spend some time on it. I am not a gun person, but I think that this is an issue that a lot of people have a lot of interest in, and frankly, I think there's a lot of misinformation about it. Somebody's going to have to go a long way to convince me that an AR-15 is usable for self-defense, especially with 65 high-capacity magazines. So that's the story, Rob.
Can I ask you one more question?
Go right ahead.
I'm going to say, you know, your opinion about the Karen Reed. You must have heard about that trial in Massachusetts, the train wreck.
I've heard a little bit about it. I think she's been on trial for, 15 years or something?
No, not that long, but it's pretty messy. But I'm just wondering, and they're almost not calling that double jeopardy, but now they didn't fill the, they got her, they were supposed to agree on all three charges, but the jurors, all of them said two of these charges she's innocent on, but these other ones, they couldn't be convincing, or, you know, majority, whatever term you want to use. And so two of the three charges, they said, she's not guilty of this, she's not guilty of that, but this one we can't agree on. So now they got to redo the whole thing over because of one charge.
They were hung. That was a hung jury respecting one charge. Don't know enough about the case to comment about it, but thanks for bringing it up, Rob. We're gonna have to say goodbye because the music is starting. But thanks again for calling and thanks for the kind words.
Very educational. Thank you.
Take care. Have a good week. Bye now. And all of the rest of you have a good week also. Thank you very much for listening. For those of you that called, thank you for joining us, because this program is much better when you're on it with us. Also, thanks to Kevin Corsa, my ace engineer producer, and he's the party responsible for the Halloween bumper music for this last show before Halloween. Me, I'm Attorney John Matulis from the Hartford County Bar Association. This is Law Talk, a joint venture of HCBA and WTIC, News Talk 1080. And as we say around the courthouse at Law Talk, see ya.
Law Talk is presented as a public service by the Hartford County Bar Association. Its content is intended to be educational and informative, but is not considered to be formal legal opinion. If you want or need a formal legal opinion upon which to rely in decision-making, please consider formally engaging an attorney to review all relevant facts in detail and examine the pertinent law as it applies to those facts. A solid opinion means better decisions. The views expressed during this program are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of the Hartford County Bar Association, its officers, or its directors.